we present the News Quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello and welcome again to the News Quiz. We start with an advertisement in the Nottingham Evening Post, read by Peter Donaldson.
Lost. Much-loved lop-eared rabbit. Owner is worried, needs teeth cutting.
Thank you, T. Brown of Nottingham, for that. Now let's meet the teams. Please will you welcome first on my right, Andy Hamilton and Tony Banks, MP. I'm facing them on my left, Alan Corran, and a newcomer to the News Quiz, Fred McCauley. And before we start round one, here's an item spotted in The Independent.
Police warn shoppers and caterers to beware of buying stolen beef unfit for home consumption after thieves made off with about £100 of joints from a lorry in Glasgow. Police said the meat was chuck roll and only suitable for use in the catering industry.
Thank you, all the listeners who spotted that. Andy, your first question. Who might be packed off after the party packed?
Is this a question about our beloved Prime Minister?
It is.
Well, there was a lot of speculation in the papers at the weekend that there'd been a secret deal between him and the Lion King, who is apparently Michael Heseltine. I don't know. The Lion King dies halfway through the film. I don't know if Michael Heseltine knows that. He gets trampled to death by a wildebeest. But anyway, there was this rumour that part of the deal that was done at the time that Major fought the leadership election last year was if Major continued to make a complete dog's breakfast of everything, and if they sort of returned minus seven candidates in the local election, then Hezza, as the younger thrusting man, would come in and sort of take over. And this was denied by Michael Heseltine with a performance that was almost as convincing as Princess Di on Panorama. And that's it, basically. They denied that any such deal had been struck.
Would you like to do one for the repeat, just in case? Well, just 2 days is a long time ago.
Yeah. Our new Prime Minister, Michael Heseltine. Very astutely and with a lot of foresight, entered into a pact with the now dead John Major.
Tony, what had the wrong kind of price put on it?
Oh, yes, it must be rail track. We're apparently going to be giving away for £1.8 million all the things that we currently own that cost billions of pounds, and indeed need, I think, at least another £11 billion spent on them in order to make the trains run on time. Unless, of course, we can bring Mussolini back.
Exactly right, yes. This was the government sale valuation of rail track. The figure of under £2 billion means they'll be paid one-tenth of its real worth. That's the same system used to calculate the chairman's salary, but the other way round, of course. So, Fred, welcome to the News Quiz. Your first question, whose beef ban isn't hard to swallow?
I think this is our beef, isn't it? It's the only beef I know that's been banned. British beef is not good for you, unless it's Aberdeen Angus, who we all know and love. He's a country dancer from Aberdeen. And it was swallowed, or it was allegedly swallowed, by Chancellor Cole this week at a luncheon with John Major. But in fact, Cole has developed hamster-like pouches in his jaws. And he was going, yeah, he's very good, very good. And he was tucking it away in his jowls. And he spat it all out afterwards, going, ha, ha, ha. Tommy, beef not very good.
Am I the only one in the world that's concerned about the poor old cows, you know, that spend their life giving milk, only then to sort of get their throats cut and stuck in an incinerator? I mean, you know, all to bring back public confidence. Well, there's no public confidence in the government at the moment. Why don't they cull the ministers?
This would make an awful smell after the next door's barbecue, wouldn't it?
There was... There was a great story that in the US they tried to ban a Damien Hirst exhibit, which was, it's true, it was bits of chopped up cow in formaldehyde. They tried to argue that this was in breach of the import ban on beef. I've never actually seen anybody try to eat a Damien Hirst exhibit before. Interfering with his artistic freedom to tuck into it a bit.
I once witnessed an amazing piece of honesty from a butcher in Aviemore. I was in the butcher shop and there was a woman trying to buy a joint of beef, and he had two sizes. There was one fairly small and another one that was massive, and it was going to cost about £18. And the butcher said, "I could always cut it." And the woman said, "Oh, it'd be a shame to cut it." And he said, "It was a shame to kill the thing in the first place." It's not going to harm it now, you know.
So 2 points to Fred. Privately, German ministers say that eating British beef could be political suicide, or just suicide. Alan, here's a piece of music for you. Alan, which leader celebrated May Day with a party?
Tony Banks is going to have a fit in a minute. This is Old Labour, Old Arthur, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
This is Arthur Scargill, of blessed memory. Now, I don't want to say anything about Arthur, because he and I share a hairdresser. And indeed, we share the hair, which is why I'm bald tonight, because Arthur's wearing it. It's Arthur's wonderful new, wonderful old party, the last socialist, well, with the exception of Tony Banks, of course, last socialist left in Britain. And he founded his party on... on May the 1st, just when the Russians were having that wonderful... They didn't have guns going past anymore. They had people walking past, sucking ice lollies. There were 10,000 ice lollies walking across Nevsky Prospect. I thought it was marvellous. Anyway, Arthur's a bit late on all that, not realising that everything else had disappeared. Arthur stands proud and alone. Or alone, anyway.
Perfectly right. This refers to miners' leader Arthur Scargill, who formally launched his new Socialist Labour Party on May the 1st. Mr. Scargill hopes to bring the leadership skills to work as well for Socialist Labour as they did for the NUM, with its famous resounding battle cry, "One out, both out." At the end of round one, the scores are everybody 4 points. And we start round two with a notice from the Guild of Bricklayers.
Kempston Creative Brickwork Competition. Arrangements are well in hand for this interesting weekend. There are likely to be at least 10 teams competing, with many unusual erections anticipated.
Thank you, Michael Rose of Derbyshire, for that. Andy, who'll be taken for a ride around their half-century?
This is the Queen. She's going to celebrate being married for 50 years to Prince Philip. She should get a medal for that, I think. And the way they're going to celebrate is they're going to get 1,000 horses, because horses are the thing that they have in common. And make up your own joke. And they're going to treat them up and down, and they're going to wave at them and say how nice they look. And it's basically the only optimistic, cheerful thing that they could find to celebrate about the royal family. And the whole family will be there, hands on each other's throats, probably. And Princess Di will be there throwing herself beneath the horse's hooves. And that'll be it. It'll be really jolly. It'll be televised by Panorama.
When I heard they were having 1,000 horses, I thought it was a massive barbecue. Maybe that's what we should do. We should just swap horses and cows around and have cow racing followed by a horse barbecue.
This is the plan to mark the Royal Golden Wedding anniversary in high style with 2,000 horses. There was a great deal of confusion when the arrangements were first made. The palace explained when they ordered 1,000 white horses, it was actually to restock Princess Margaret's minibar. The Princess of Wales and the Duchess of York have been invited to the special display of fox hunting, but in an act of generous reconciliation, they'll both be given a 100-yard start. Tony, your question. Which overseas initiative was left stationary?
Was it a train?
No.
I think this is these pencils.
Oh, the pencils.
To Uzbekistan.
To Uzbekistan, that's right. HMSO did a deal with a lot of people in Uzbekistan for pencils and rubbers and things, 6.5 million quid worth of them, and they sent them all over there and they ate them. Well, I mean, they did. I think they ate them because they couldn't find them. They'd all disappeared and they refused to pay.
I think actually what happened was
that
they took the order and they, you know, they ran off these pencils with sort of Cyrillic writing on them and tiny rubbers on the end. But then someone in Tashkent said, nothing to do with us, Gov. Don't know who you spoke to on the phone, but we didn't know them. So somewhere, is that not right? Somewhere there are millions of inadequate pencils that they can't do anything with.
I think there's one pencil 300 foot long in Iraq.
Her Majesty's Stationery Office had an abortive contract to supply school materials to Uzbekistan, which left them £3 million out of pocket. Most embarrassing for the government, it's the most they've ever spent on anything to do with education. HMSO officials shrugged off the affair, saying that they were accustomed to people going back on their word, as their principal job was proofreading Hansard. Fred, your piece of music now. Fred, who wanted an equal right to a free ride?
I don't know if I know this one, but didn't Fergie, who we're not allowed to talk about, get a free ticket to the States this week?
Again? No. Anyone else?
I think... I think... I think there might be some conferring going on here.
Imperial College. Corum.
Right. I'm no further forward, Alan.
Well...
Would the other team like to go?
With very nice New Zealand. It's a lesbian partner of a transport worker who took her employers to court saying that she was entitled to... Andy, why are you shaking your head? Is it not this?
I don't think it is.
I think it's actually a bloke who insists that now he's retired, why should he have to wait to 65 in order to get his bus pass? And he's entitled to one since he's retired.
Exactly.
But he might be a New Zealander lesbian, Alan. I don't know.
Didn't say in the story.
The
lesbian answer will do just as well. I say just as well. I mean, the lesbian answer will be slightly different.
It certainly would be, because it's a bloke.
It's about a lesbian trapped inside a man's body. The story you were asking about, though I agree that the New Zealand lesbian transsexual would almost fit it, was about pensioner Stanley Atkins of Telford, who successfully took his fight for a free bus pass to the European court. He was as surprised as anyone. He'd asked the conductor to put him off at the post office. So a point each there, and we go on to Alan. Why are parents going back to school before their children?
Is this the one about the Bishop of Hull?
Yes.
Saying that... Well, it's a night. Every week there is a bishop poking his nose in where it's not wanted. I mean, now that God is officially dead, as far as the church is concerned, they get up to anything. Well, the thought for the day from the Bishop of Hull was that children being improperly brought up by their parents because the parents don't know how to bring up children, and he suggested a 12-week course in parenthood.
What would you learn on the course, then? Well, things like how to do their buttons up and stuff, or what?
How to get vomit off your pyjamas in the early stages.
Talking about God, what was that thing in the newspaper about Glenn Hoddle had found God? Someone said, Glenn Hoddle has found God, and someone else said, it must have been a wonderful pass.
2 points to Alan. It's the call for training courses on good parenting made at a conference to discuss the father's role in the family. The Bishop of Hull said that a qualification would enable couples to be better parents, and of course would give Princess Diana another exam to fail. Bob Geldof was... Oh, I don't like Princess Diana jokes. Fergie jokes you can get away with, can't you?
Well, I hope so, because I got one.
Princess Diana is very, very popular. She's coming next week, by the way. She'll be got her mask, she'll be watching. The scores at the end of round two are Alan and Fred 7, but Andy and Tony in the lead with 9 points. start round three with an item spotted in the Law Society Gazette.
Pictured above are lawyers Peter Rathbone and George Clement of Hull, who climbed all the way to the summit of Mount Kilimanjaro to raise money for deep-sea fishermen.
Thank you, David Woodward of Bristol, for sending that in. Andy, why is a bit of a drink and a bit of the other the right stuff?
I've got a complaint now. Why have I been given the question about mental instability in writers? Because there was this report out this week, and it's about, it was a psychologist who'd done a survey, as they do, and it was about, it's a funny thing, isn't it, about writers. I think the guy who did the survey had fallen victim to the mythology that surrounds writers, because say if you're like Alan, and you turn out beautifully fashioned pieces week in, week out, you may be known as a superb writer, well respected within the profession, but if on the other hand you write one piece every 15 years and then spend the rest of your time getting horribly drunk, vomiting over children and punching nuns, then you're a troubled genius. And this poor sap of a psychologist chose to study the troubled geniuses, and he came out with the conclusion that writers have got a very high incidence of mental illness. I reject that, and so does my invisible giraffe Gerald.
I mean, that story was actually headlined something like psychiatrist does a survey of 100 dead writers.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought that was pretty miraculous, actually.
No, I think they're writers who work for Carlton. Oh. I think they're... I think that's how he did it. He works at the Maudsley. The researcher works at the Maudsley. And I used to live next to the Maudsley. I used to get the 68 bus. And the day patients used to get on at the stop after me. And I remember one day two of them got on and they sat in front of me, and one of them turned to the other. He said, "So what are you then?" And this guy said, they don't know really, but they think I'm a paranoid schizophrenic." And then he turned to the other one, he said, "And so what are you?" He says, "Oh, I don't know, but I walked through a plate glass door yesterday." Proudly. Anyway.
If the sign that you've got great works of prose inside you is lots of drinking and irrational behaviour as far as your marital life is concerned, Jim Davidson's bound to be a genius in waiting.
Fred, who found pennies from heaven weren't worth the paper they were printed on?
Thank you. There's a kind of Scottish flavour to this, because there was a school someplace in England where £10 million turned up in Royal Bank of Scotland fake notes, and the kids didn't get discovered until they'd spent £4.8 million in the tuck shop. And there was an explosion of zits amongst some young children, and they eventually discovered that there was a large bit missing down the middle of the note, and there was something wrong with it.
The story concerned the residents of St. Albans, who found their town awash with £10 notes stuffed into letter boxes. They initially presumed it was part of a last-ditch Tory effort to get elected. Children in a local park stopped playing football to go and get plastic bags full of the tenners, a game they called Managing Arsenal. Alan, your question: how is Kirk taking a break from Blake?
Kirk is as in church, as in enterprise.
As in Scottish person sitting next to you, yes. Kirk.
Is the Church of Scotland refusing to sing any English hymns on the ground it might incriminate them?
He doesn't know it.
Oh, I didn't know that. Well, I'll pass this across to Fred, because he's done all the writing. He's got Jerusalem down. It would seem from your writing, stop me when I'm wrong, we'll ignore Simon for this bit, that the Church of Scotland refuses to sing Jerusalem.
That's right, because it's...
It refuses to fly the European flag. Well, it refuses to have tenors that haven't got a white bar down the middle. Is it nice living there? And it only eats Aberdeen Angus cattle.
That's right.
No, what taking, what strange people.
Taking Jerusalem out because it's just too damn cheery.
The Church of Scotland has decided to expunge Jerusalem from the next edition of its hymn book on the grounds that nobody understands the words. It has long been the subject of academic debate. Some claim the line, "Bring me my arrows of desire," is phallic symbolism, to the concern of the Women's Institutes, who immediately voted to replace it with the inoffensive "All Things Bright and Beautiful," with its verse about purple-headed mountains. The purge is part of a general move in the church to eliminate outdated references with no relevance to modern life. So churches in Essex are going through their hymn book to cross out the word virgin. And the scores at the end of round three are Alan and Fred 11 points, but Andy and Tony just still in the lead with 13 points. Before we start the final round, here's a clipping sent to us by Christopher Pearson of Marlborough. It comes from the new Sunday paper, Sunday Business.
A spokesman for Heinz denied competition would affect sales of their beans. But one industry insider said, if Heinz think it's not a problem, then they're whistling in the wind.
Andy, the last piece of music for you. NCC and Life is a Minestrone. Andy, who didn't start with the soup course?
Didn't start with the soup course? God, I wish I had Fred on my team.
It's a scientific question.
Yeah, could it be that we're something to do with yeast? That people are descended from yeast, like pint of lager, as opposed to what they thought we were descended from?
Which was what?
God, I'm thrashing around here. What? I mean...
You haven't walked through any double glazing doors, have you?
Well, not recently, but I think I will immediately after this programme. It's something to do with the origin of life, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, the origin.
What, that we're descended
from yeast.
Parmesan?
Something
from
yeast?
Yes.
Oh,
well, but that's old hat. Surely that's... Everybody knows that. Yes. Long, long time ago, a brontosaurus had a candida infection, and that was... I'm sorry, was that word not... There's one very strange laugh on the word candida out there. Yes, and we descended from yeast, apparently.
I just remember soup being used to be thought of as the mixture from which human beings generated.
Primordial.
There's another theory now, but I can't get any nearer than that.
All right.
They used to describe it as soup. It was amniotic fluid with bits in it. And gradually it coalesced, and before you knew it, you had Arthur Scargill. But And obviously someone has come up with a different idea.
Yeah.
Not bad, because that one doesn't sound much crop, does it?
I'll give Andy and Tony 1 point for that. The answer is, according to scientists, life began not in a primordial soup, but on a pizza. This means the creation was not the work of an old bearded man in a white robe, but a spotty youth on a moped. The object in question was a lukewarm sponge of muddy clay on which tiny organisms multiplied in their thousands. Scientists have proved a pizza started all life, but the chances are a beef burger will end it. Tony, who had pride in their product but had their prejudiced claim bust?
This is a bra manufacturer who was trying to claim credit for the fact that all of the women that we saw in that production of
Pride and Prejudice
had prominent bosoms. I'm very PC, and I have to be very careful and pick my words with great delicacy here.
Lucky it's radio, then, after all
yes.
that hand just...
They won't know what I was doing with my hands at that
point. Oh, I think they'll just guess.
That it was this particular bra manufacturer. I don't wear bras these days, so I can't remember Breitel or someone like that.
Did you wear bras in the days of old Labour?
Oh yes.
Burley.
The underwear manufacturing question.
Uh-huh. Yeah. You're still wearing it then, of course. Yeah.
That's Alan, and I guaranteed a year's supply.
I was going to say, no.
I was only going to say at least I have more support than the Labour Party, but that wouldn't actually be true.
The story was that the bra manufacturers Burley claimed that the Bennett girls were given a lift by their product, while the BBC credited the effect on authentic corsetry and, of course, on Jennifer Ely's cup size. The BBC also explained angrily that they had taken on an expert to investigate cleavage closely for £20 a week.
Might have done it for nothing.
It wasn't very much, but it's all he could afford after he'd paid the opticians for them. Alan, who's coping for rough justice from the bill and the beak?
Well, this is one where you say no writers aren't mad at all, it's just judges and lawyers who are mad. There is a Jack Russell Terrier somewhere, which is leading a quiet, happy life by the fire, as Jack Russell's will. And the neighbour of this Jack Russell, or the neighbour of the man who owns the Jack Russell, said it worries his duck. Don't worry, duck, why? You can't even tell whether a duck's worried about a Jack Russell. You really have to understand duck. You have to speak fluent duck. Anyway, so the Jack Russell has been hailed before the courts. And the lawyer for the Jack Russell has called a duck. I suppose a duck will be out of the question. Anyway, the lawyer has called a duck, a number of other animals, a newt, a hen, various items they found in trouser turn-ups, woodwork, and in the ear of the man next door. And they're all going to... No, they all, I think, already have testified on behalf of the Jack Russell, which has got off with a caution. Or maybe it's got off entirely. Maybe it got off with a duck. I know even less about animals than most lawyers, but I think that's the case.
I thought they found the little Jack Russell guilty, and he drop-kicked the magistrate at the end of the trial, didn't he?
So before we reveal the final scores, let's see what cuttings the team have brought along. Andy.
I'm grateful to Susan Cornelius from Glasgow for sending me this rather bizarre account. Milwaukee. A 73-year-old woman who claims she began having spontaneous orgasms after an electronic bingo board fell on her. Isn't that always the way? Has had her lawsuit seeking damages from a Roman Catholic church thrown out by a US judge. Mary Verdiv has consistently refused to undergo a psychological examination.
Tony.
When she got to 69, it really got funny. This is from the Daily Telegraph. Sporting Life yesterday reproduced John Frankham's analysis of the Duchess of York's performance in the 26-mile Qatar Desert Marathon horse race. That is, reflected Channel 4's television racing pundit sagely, the first time she has had 14 hands between her legs.
You can say what you like about Fergie.
I told you there was a Fergie.
Say what you like. Fred,
allegedly.
What's your Fergie clipping?
Religious fanatic Jose Ricart was carrying a banner proclaiming the end of the world is nigh in Madrid when he was knocked down and killed by a truck. Alan.
I've got one from the Big Issue, and a big issue indeed it is. Customs officers were suspicious of Imelda Banks from the outset. She had a huge suitcase, explained one inspector, and looked extremely furtive. The suitcase was x-rayed, but revealed nothing untoward aside from a large, fluffy koala bear. A more detailed inspection, however, revealed a different story. We opened the case and found a midget with a false black nose and adhesive furry ears. He squeaked, "I'm Chippy the Talking Teddy." But we said, "No, you're not, you're a dwarf." Mrs. Banks and her diminutive husband are now awaiting trial. Later, a customs officer explained, "Teddies don't smell of gin."
Thank you all for a wonderful show. We'll look now at the final score. Alan and Fred have a superb 15 points, but it's Andy and Tony who run out the narrow winners with 16 points. That's all for this week. Goodbye.